offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. As always, we have the pleasure of joining you live from our studios at the Shri Sathya Sai Media Center. This is Prem, and with me, instead of Arvind today, we have another member of our team who is no stranger to all of you. We have with us Brother Sai Prakash, who is joining us for the Afternoon Satsang. We are going to be continuing with the satsang on the Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba book, a book which is a compilation of conversations that Dr. Hislop has had with Swami or has been a witness to. To give you a brief of what we covered last time, what we were discussing last time, multiple points were discussed, especially about the concept of doership, the concept of being an instrument. That is going to be continued even today. But there were also some interesting conversations about writing letters to Swami, how one has to approach that, and Swami gave some beautiful clarifications about that. But then it's a new episode, and there are some interesting conversations today too. Today's conversation also has a portion where Swami is in an interview with some devotees, and some happenings in that interview too is being discussed as part of the book today. So before we dwell into that, with humble pranams to Swami, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram Prem. It's been quite a while since I came back to this platform. And it's always such a pleasure, you know, trying to read and trying to understand some of these things that Swami has told. And each sentence is so potent with meaning. When I was reading what you had done the previous Thursday, that section was relatively very interesting compared to what we have to face this session. But anyway, praying to Swami that He guides our words, because every sentence is so deep, and we can go on and on for an hour based on each sentence. But when I was going through what you had discussed last time, there's this whole idea about instrument,
right?
And Swami says how consider yourself as an instrument. I had a beautiful personal experience,
mm-hmm.
and I thought maybe I could share that. I have shared it earlier, but every time you share it, you get a new insight into what it actually means. So, you know, these were this was around in the early 90s, when we were in our school, about 91, 92, in our 8th standard or 9th standard at that time. And the thing that we used to do was, every day we would write a letter to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you won't know if Swami is coming your way. If suddenly Swami will say, make way, and He would start that direction. And the moment you see that Swami is coming in your direction, immediately you take a piece of paper and quickly write something on it. And this was an open secret. I mean, many of the boys would do it. And sometimes Swami would choose to take somebody's letter. And since it would be written in a hurry and it was just a single liner, Swami would actually stand there and read it. And then say something, or smile, or pat the cheek, or pull the cheek, or give namaskar, anything. And we would always give open letters, since it was just a single line. Mm-hmm. We would just write that one line and give an open letter to Swami, and Swami would stand there and see it. So on that day, suddenly Swami started coming in the direction where I was sitting, and so I took a piece of paper and I said, Swami, make me an instrument of Thee. So, you know, that was uppermost in the mind, and I said, Swami, please make me an instrument of Thee. And then I wrote, and then I gave the piece of paper to Swami, and Swami came and stood there and gave a beautiful smile. He looked at the letter, he said, instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, yeah, maybe I made the right prayer. Mm-hmm. Then Swami gave an answer which was completely, you know, unexpected. He said, but this time I have not brought any instruments with me. In 1 second, Isari aim instrument tiskuralede, he said.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, instantly, of course, my mind went to Swami saying, like, how He had the flute when He came as Lord Krishna.
Right.
And He said, this time I have not brought any instrument with me. He said, idi tappa, except this.
Mm.
And He pointed to His hair.
Mm.
And he said, except this, I have not brought any instrument with me. So, you know, it was a very, and then he just smiled and walked past. And you can't understand what it means. So Swami says, this hair is my instrument. And, you know, it's so every part of his form. In fact, that is something which we will be talking about this episode, how his form itself is so beautiful, and everything that kind of encompasses his form is actually for the sake of the devotees.
Right. In fact, you know, even as you're narrating about that letter and the many things that we had discussed last time, one of the things, of course, Swami says in this is, you know, the process of writing itself is a way by which you are reassured that what you're making as a prayer is reaching Swami.
Right.
Just going through this very beautiful book, maybe it's a good time to even mention to the listeners, it's a wonderful book to read, Shri Satyasai Madhura Smriti.
Okay.
Written by a devotee by name Suchitra, from the family of Seshagiri Rao.
Suchitra Aunty, yes. Right. We have done interview.
Yeah, we've also done an interview with her.
Right.
So she writes about, I think, her daughter, Mrs. Vidulata, again, a devotee whom we have had the opportunity to have conversations with. She was studying in school in the 70s. Right? She brought up typically like any of the Balvikas children, this is how you should dress, this is how you should groom yourself. So she always had the habit of wearing Vibhuti Mark. I'm just recalling from memory, so I might be wrong. So listeners can read the book and get the exact details. So one time when she was in the hostel and the reserve of Vibhuti which she had got over.
Okay.
So she couldn't wear Vibhuti Mark on her forehead. Her mother had not sent it in time. So she felt very repentant that she was not following a discipline that was so dear to Swami. So as a little girl, in all her innocence, she writes a letter to Swami apologizing for that.
Oh.
Right? And she posts it to Swami. And after writing the letter, she's wondering, will Swami be able to place me?
Okay.
No? Will she know that I am so-and-so writing the letter? So at the end of the letter, she writes, daughter of so-and-so, granddaughter of Sundarama, great-granddaughter of Seshagiri Rao. And signs with her name. And she sends it off, and summer vacation comes. She comes home, and she says, I want to go to see Swami in vacation time. And they get to know that Swami is in Vrindavan, so they make a trip to Vrindavan. And when she's sitting in the line, Swami comes up to her, and Swami said, you wrote me a letter. You are so-and-so, daughter of so-and-so, granddaughter of so-and-so, great-granddaughter of so-and-so. And Swami smiled and Swami said, I received your letter, I read your letter. I wanted to just tell you that I read all the letters that come to me.
So sweet.
Letters, any number of, I mean, talking of instruments, talking of letters, I think that process also became an instrument by which we could connect to Swami.
Absolutely. Right? In fact, it was, you know, called as postal sadhana.
Exactly. You know, we used to have telegram sadhana.
Right.
Fax sadhana.
Anything associated with Swami becomes a sadhana. That's the beauty of.
Absolutely. I think in a sense, Swami is going to make a reference to that approach to sadhana itself in the conversation today. So maybe we'll start with a couple of exchanges and then we can discuss about it.
Right.
So Hislop asked this question. To do all these tasks, Swami takes a lot of energy. Human energy is low, and Swami says to call on divine energy. How? And Swami responds to that by saying, yes, human energy is low and divine energy is without limit. You are God. So Hislop says, does Swami mean that when the human energy limit is felt, that I should reject it as false and instead identify myself as God, as he who is limitless energy? Swami says, yes, reject it. Look at your shadow. You are sitting and your shadow is there. When you stand up, your shadow also grows. Your shadow is the human energy. You are the divine energy. When you rise and also do the divine work, your energy grows. So Swami goes on to speak about that, but maybe we can dwell a little on this before we move ahead.
Right.
So probably to put it in context, Hislop is an elderly person.
Right.
And with entrusted with immense work, we should probably speak about the enormous contribution of some of these elders
mm-hmm.
who were instrumental in setting up the organization in the initial years, be it Dr. Hislop,
right.
Be it the devotees in the Indian organization, some of them who have worked tirelessly, right? And Swami used to have strict disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman we all have had the opportunity to observe very closely, Chiranjee Rao Garu.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever he would go, whatever work Swami has given him, he would go walking by himself, spending his own money, and used to be a very strict disciplinarian when it comes to that because
right.
of Swami's discipline. And such eye to detail, just like how Swami would expect. So coming from his love, this question, you can imagine where it comes from.
Right.
Right. The immense work that Swami has entrusted him with and the limitations of his own health and age. So he's asking Swami, you know.
Sometimes the energy gets low. In fact, when you're talking about this, even Kasturi uncle comes to mind.
Absolutely.
Because, he was all in all for the ashram when I think from the 50s to around 70s. So he would translate Swami's discourses. He would write the translate the Vahinis. He would write
type
books. Type them out. And I believe he would type using a single finger,
mm-hmm.
word by word. I just can't imagine that. Quantum.
And also the postmaster.
And also the postmaster. All in one. And always smiling.
Right.
One thing which my parents are, many of the old devotees always remember, whenever they see Kasturi uncle, is always beaming, you know, that smile, always in bliss. So that is something. So obviously the physical body and there is a tiredness that sets in with age and with the years and the amount of work. But then what is Swami trying to tell us? He's telling, don't associate yourself with the limited human energy. Associate yourself with the divine energy. And he says the divine energy is without limit. You are God. I mean, this is a statement. It's just like a declaration. You are God.
Right. In fact, I was seeing this documentary, I think, on Discovery or something.
Mm-hmm.
It is about how they train athletes.
Okay.
Right? One thing is the physical training, the exercise and building one's reserve of energy and all of that. The other is the sports psychology, which has become a very thriving field now.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every important team, be it the cricket team of a national side or sports, football and rugby, they all have a psychologist as part of their support team. Because sports psychology has become such an important thing, and they describe that in this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
The host of the show is made to run on the treadmill, right? And they say, you just run, you know, let's see how many miles you can run. And so he says that, you know, I usually run about 5 miles a day. That's
mm-hmm.
my limit. And he's a pretty fit person, so he runs 5 miles. And at the end of it, he's completely exhausted.
Right.
And then they put him through a series of psychological sessions
mm-hmm.
where they teach him how to dissociate himself from the limitations of the body.
Oh.
Right? To a certain extent, he says that this is my limit.
Mm.
He says, this is what I'm capable of. So they teach him techniques of how to remove yourself from that idea.
Okay.
Right?
Mm.
And he's able to run much more than he thought he could.
Oh.
Right? So they say that even within the idea of I am this body and I have these limitations, we put certain blocks and we cloister ourselves within that. So here Swami is telling of a technique where you completely remove yourself from the idea that I am this body and I am limited.
Limited with this human energies. In fact, the other thing which directly deals with energy and with deals with healing as such is Reiki.
Right.
Like
right.
Reiki is, of a Japanese origin,
mm-hmm.
where Rei means universal and Ki is life energy.
Okay.
So basically the process of channelizing divine energy to, of course, there's a lot of, doubts on whether you can admit it medically.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is cure, if there is a feeling of relaxation, and if the pain has come down for the patient, it means a lot, and for any kind of feeling. So it this energy, when you break out from the limitations of what you call a human energy and then start going to a higher realm, possibly that is getting a glimpse of what the divine energy is.
Right. And it is so true, you know, when you're talking about Professor Kasturi. We have seen so many elderly people,
right,
post-retirement coming here and working tirelessly. I mean,
correct.
It's not an energy that you can associate with that body of that age.
Correct.
Know? Purely it is that inspiration that comes from associating with Swami. Maybe, may not be saying that I am divine, but merely even that idea that I am an instrument of Swami and I am doing this for Swami kind of makes us more energetic, capable of doing much more than we would have been able to do otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, Puttaparthi is full of people who can, you know, test the limits of any teenager also, the amount of work that they do. When Swami is talking about this, of course, Dr. Hislop is asking about the human energy and Swami says there is only divine energy. There is a section in the Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna is talking about something of the similar lines. And this is from chapter 7, that verse 4, 5. These two verses, Krishna is talking about what we call the material energy and the divine energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the verse 4 goes like this. He says, Bhumir apo nalo vayur, kam mano buddhir evacha, ahankare ityam me bhinna prakritir ashtada. So that means he says, earth, water, fire, air, space, mind, intellect and ego. These are the eight components of my material energy.
Right.
So basically it is the five elements and then you have the mind, the intellect and ego. And I think Swami has also mentioned that God exists in each one of us in these eight forms. The five elements, then you have the mind, intellect and the ego. And then the next shloka, he says, the second line of the next shloka, he says, Jiva Bhutam Mahabaho Yayadam Dharayate Jagat. He says, such is my inferior energy, but beyond it, O mighty armed Arjuna, I have a superior energy. This is the Jiva Shakti, the soul energy, which comprises the embodied souls who are the basis of life in this world. So what he says is, the life force, the prana shakti itself is my divine energy. So if you talk about human energy and divine energy, it's interesting because in one perspective, if you look at it, the five elements never age. So from the time you're born, you are endowed with the five elements. And Swami is saying you have to relate to those elements, the mind and intellect and ego, as divine energy. This material energy is also divine. And the divine energy is represented in the world as five elements. But they are also divine. That's why he says there is only divine energy.
Right. So I think the whole idea is about, Swami is saying here, rejecting that your energy is that individual,
limited
and to go beyond it. Many, many times Swami would have said this, and many beautiful episodes where Swami will display superhuman energy,
absolutely,
superhuman powers.
Right.
And then at the end of it, Swami will say, this is there in you also.
Right? Right.
Swami will say, this is not any divine energy in the sense of it is beyond your capacity. Swami said, this is just the energy of purity which is there within you.
Purity, exactly.
Right? Many times, and very beautifully, Swami would say, you know, from the time this body has come into this world, not even one selfish thought has crossed this mind. And that is what you're seeing is the power of that purity. Swami would often say that. And that's what Swami says. And maybe we'll just continue with that conversation. And Swami, Hislop asks, Swami, the divine energy versus limited human energy. Swami says there is only divine energy, as you were pointing out to that reference in Bhagavad Gita. And Hislop asks, but what seems to me to be my human energy does not seem to be sufficient. For example, the trip to Central America, saying in his responsibilities as the chairman of the American organization, he says, but Swami, the human energy does not seem to be sufficient, like the trip to Central America.
Mm.
Swami says, all is God. Know that it is He who is energy, that all is well. And Hislop says, oh, when the human energy slows, leave it and know that the truth is divine energy. Mm. Like when some years ago on long drives, Baba would look a little tired and then instantly he would be fresh like a flower. Very beautiful reference to Swami's travels.
Right.
We've seen this literally, right?
Yes.
Many, many times when Swami would come from Parthi to Vrindavan or Vrindavan to Parthi, Swami would travel and that time Swami's physical age was well over 70, 80. But we would see this. Swami would look a little tired when he would come because 4 hours of travel early in the morning most often.
Yes.
A few hours later, Swami will come for darshan. Even if he is not coming for a public darshan, Swami would come in Thrai or, you know, some boys would have the opportunity to see Swami. You'd be absolutely fresh like a flower. There's no other description that suits that nature
exactly.
Better.
So this is the, you know, perspective that a devotee has.
Mm.
The perception, basically, that you think that, okay, Swami is tired, Swami is looking tired. And so with that in mind, Dr. Hislop says, Swami, Baba would look a little tired and then instantly he would be fresh like a flower. But the answer that Swami gives is absolutely historic. Swami goes on to say, do not equate this body with human bodies. It is only the appearance of a form for the sake of the devotees. There is nothing of Swami except for his devotees. There are no desires. This body is just an appearance of form. There is matter. There is humanness. There is divinity. Matter is selfishness. Humanness is selfishness plus some kindness. God has no selfishness, just total love. As the base, selfishness is essential for health and prosperity. Without health, what can be done? Work for these must be done. Then help others. Then God only. I mean, it is a power-packed statement.
Right. I mean, the first thing that Swami says is, don't compare this body with human bodies. Right.
Right.
As you said, from the devotee's perspective, we always think of that, and that is also good to a certain extent.
Mm.
Swami has said that also because. You know, when Swami would say you should be grateful, Swami doesn't need you to come and say thank you.
Right.
But being grateful is good for you.
Correct.
Right?
No, that is the way in which we can relate to.
Exactly. I recall a devotee narrating this episode. We might have said this before. When Swami was doing the Lingodbhavam,
mm-hmm.
as we've seen, physically we would see Swami undergoing enormous pain.
Right.
In that, right? So apparently when Swami was doing this Lingodbhavam and struggling a lot in the process, there was one devotee who was sitting along with the bhajan singers right in the front,
mm-hmm.
right, and who apparently was pretty close to Swami in those years. And he was clapping his hands and showing so much delight in his face,
mm.
which was quite contrary to, you know, Swami was suffering there physically, visibly, and this person was like clapping of course, doing the bhajans, but expressing delight in his expressions, right? And 2-3 times Swami looked at him,
mm-hmm.
Almost like saying that you're standing out in the crowd. So the next day, Swami called this devotee. And Swami asked him, yesterday, you seem to be more happy than usual. What happened? So he said, Swami, I was witnessing Lingodbhavam and it was so beautiful and it's a grand divine sight.
Mm.
That is there, but didn't you see that this body was suffering?
Mm.
He said, Swami, what is there for this body? And, you know, Swami is God. Swami said, few months back, your daughter was undergoing delivery pains.
Mm-hmm.
That time you were sitting outside the room in the hospital and crying and praying to Swami that she is in so much pain, help her, help her. He said, Swami, but that is a human body and this is divine body. He said, that is true. But still, when a body in front of you is suffering, you should have compassion and empathy. Swami said, that is the first step in spirituality. If that itself you have not understood, how will you progress further?
Beautiful.
Right?
Beautiful.
So knowing that this body is different, knowing that, don't get caught up in the idea that, oh, Swami's body is physical and it is suffering, it has pain. But at the same time, that empathy also should be there.
Absolutely.
Right? That empathy is good for you. It is not that Swami requires that empathy, Swami requires your compassion, but it is good for you. But as Swami is saying here, don't ever forget that this body is not like any other body.
Right. Before this, there is this statement, this whole analogy which Swami is giving, that example about human energy and divine energy, which is so beautiful. He says, Dr. Hislop is asking, does Swami mean that when the human energy limit is felt, that I should reject it as false and instead identify myself as God, as He who is limitless energy? Swami says, yes, reject it. So constant integrated awareness is actually trying to reject the limitations that come to you. Then he gives this beautiful example of, look at your shadow. You are sitting and your shadow is there. When you stand up, your shadow also grows. Your shadow is the human energy. You are the divine energy. I mean, such a beautiful analogy. He says, when you're sitting, your shadow is sitting. When the divine energy grows, when you stand up, the shadow also stands up. When you rise and also do the divine work, your energy grows. So, again, Swami gave that beautiful example of worldly life and spiritual life. You know, like climbing a tree.
Right.
So there is a tree and he says you climb the tree that is spiritual life. And you climb the shadow of the tree, that is worldly life. If you climb the tree and get the fruits from the tree, then you get the material fruits as well.
And a few weeks back, this analogy came in the Conversations book itself.
Okay.
And when Swami said it, Hislop was delighted.
Mm.
So he said, Swami, that's an amazing example.
Mm.
Swami said, you think it's a good example?
Oh, so sweet.
Instantly, the human nature of Swami, you think it's good? You think it explains?
It's out of concern Dr. Hislop should understand and even for the Western devotees.
Right.
In fact, going slightly off topic from this, since it is to do with Dr. John Hislop, and I had a conversation with Mrs. Ratanlal.
Okay.
And auntie was saying that many of these sections of these conversations would happen in the house which Swami had given her in Vrindavan.
Right.
So behind the bungalow, Vrindavan bungalow, old bungalow which was there, there was this house where Mrs. Ratanlal used to stay, and Swami would come and Dr. Hislop would come and they would sit in the front veranda of the house.
Okay.
So he would ask Swami questions and Swami would give answers and he would note down.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think sometime later he would record it on a tape recorder. So one of those days she was busy inside cooking and she heard Swami has raised his voice and Swami is literally admonishing him in a loud voice, and she says, what is going on? And she came out and Swami is apparently looking very, very furious. And Swami said, there is nothing called Kundalini.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Kundalini, nothing. You get up and go now. And Dr. Hislop was kind of quite bewildered. And he was like, Swami was very forcefully saying it. And then he took blessings and he walked off.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Ratanlal went to Swami and she said, Swami, what are you saying? Now, whatever you tell him, he'll put it in the book. Swami said, let him put it in the book. Then she said, Swami, it will come out that you have said in many of your discourses that there is Kundalini, there is this Shakti, and now you say there is no Kundalini. Then Swami said, you know, this man, already he was going behind all these spiritual practices and he went to a Tibetan this thing, he did meditation. After all that, he has come here. Now, if I start talking about Kundalini, he will go behind that again and he will lose his track. But she said, Swami, because of that, he might write something in the book and the world will tell Sai Baba is not telling the right thing about Kundalini. Swami said, let them tell. But he will be saved, isn't it? Swami said, let them tell. What the world tells is immaterial, but he will be saved. And of course, then she also said that a few days later, there was a talk in the Institute Auditorium where Swami mentioned about Kundalini and also told how to understand this concept.
Right.
But his compassion is so much that he wants the pupil, the person, the devotee to understand his point of view. So he gives these modern analogies, he gives this, which only Bhagwan can do.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's precisely what Swami is speaking of here as that nature of the divine, you know, completely selfless.
Exactly.
Professor Bhagya would tell us, you know, Swami had, he had asked, it happened over a few months and a few different occasions when he asked this question to Swami. He said, Swami, you should tell me, the avatar should tell me how to make use of the avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He had asked that question to Swami once, and Swami said, oh, nice question. And then Swami said, very simple, love. You know, you just have to love the avatar. And Swami said, and then later in a conversation, Swami told him, what is that love?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The same love that the avatar has, you should have for the avatar. And then Swami said, that love is threefold. And Swami drew a triangle in the air.
Right.
And Swami said, selflessness, fearlessness, and ceaselessness.
Changelessness.
Yes. So these are the three natures of that love. And so Swami is saying, and I think, you know, when you talk of energy, when you talk of the energy that Hislop is talking about, because
right.
you're talking about energy, you know, 24 hours, how many things can you do?
Right.
There is a limit, right? Mm. The body can lift only a certain amount of weight. The body can, you know, constantly work only for a few hours together. There is a limitation in the body. But the way Swami is talking about it, it is like, probably if I can think of an analogy, imagine that you want to go out and spend on something, right? And you are only thinking of the amount you can buy, your the amount of purchase you can do based on the amount of money that is there in your wallet.
Right.
And here is Swami coming and telling, but you don't know, you're the son of a millionaire.
Exactly. And you have a debit card.
You have a debit card in your hand. And right. you don't know the value of that.
Correct.
Right? You're only thinking of the money that is in your purse, but you don't understand that if you really believe and if you really understand that you are, as Swami would say, Amrtasya Putraha, you
right.
are the inheritor of immortality. Endlessness is what you really you know, inherit. Then the way you go out into the world will be completely different.
It's different.
Right?
Limitless.
At that moment, what you spend might be that much. Mm. You know? It's not that you're going to splurge all your... But the way you will approach your life will be totally different.
Absolutely.
So I think that is what Swami is saying, that if you go on thinking that I am this body, you will only think of what this body can achieve. You know, as being in the kind of jobs that we are, of speaking about Swami's message. Certainly, if 10 years ago, if somebody had said that, you know, can you do a program like this? Or can you, like Bishravana Mananam that you did?
Yes.
You know, can you do a program on Swami's 1990 discourses? You would have said no.
Absolutely.
Because we are not capable of that. We don't know that.
Mm.
But now when you look back, we know that Swami has made us do things that we, in our understanding of who we are, could not have managed to do and dream of, right?
Absolutely. In fact, one more beautiful incident which comes to mind is in 1999, when we had the chance to be with Swami in Kodaikanal, and Swami was sitting and just casually talking to all of us students, and making fun and some jokes, and everybody was laughing. And in fact, there was a boy who was laughing more than what was required.
And Swami,
and Swami looked at him and said, what is so funny? I mean, the laughter is over and he was... So this was going on a very informal session, and then suddenly Swami looked at us and then he made a very powerful declaration. He said, see, I am here talking to you all. I'm playing with you. I'm talking to you. So you do not understand who Swami is. You think Swami is like us, one amongst us. He is just talking to us, making fun and this. But when I go out into the samashti, when I go out to give to the society, when I go to give darshan, automatically that power comes. See, he manifests that power. See, when he is in this group with the students, what is required that he manifests that power of like a friend, like a parent, like a... So he's jovial and he's talking to us. He says, but the moment I go there, devotees have come for me to have my darshan. So that divinity manifests itself. And then he made, with a smile, he made a comment. and that is the time you boys go for a walk. So we felt so foolish. We said, Swami,
you can't not go for a walk.
You can't go, not go for a walk.
Swami,
exactly.
Will be so particular that you right. get that.
So it is like the physical form of Swami constantly manifesting divinity. So this form of Swami is most unique, and I think we should talk about it more.
Right. I think elsewhere Swami had made that statement, speaking of the avatar's body. Though it is physical, though it is made of the same five elements as everybody else, Swami would often say that also. This body is also not Sashvatam, Swami would say. This has also come in this material world. It is made of the material, it will go. But Swami would say, but still the avatar's body is filled with Chaitanya, Swami would say.
Right.
That every speck of this body is filled with that awareness of the divine. Right? So it is not to be equated with any other body.
In fact, when Swami was talking about human energy and divine energy and how everything is divine only, everything is divine energy. That's what Swami says. There's a beautiful poem by Rumi. Okay. Which, the way he expresses it, these people are great saints. I mean, their connect with God has helped generations and generations of people to connect to God without having physically seen Him. He says, I went to my beloved's house and knocked on his door. God said, who is it? I said, it is I. God said, there is no room for I and you. Go away.
Beautiful.
God shut the door hard on in my face. I went ahead and began my lifelong journey towards the total annihilation of I and self. After years of annihilating my own self into non-existence, I finally reached the exalted state of non-being. I went back to my beloved and knocked. God said, who is it? I said, it is you. God opened his door wide for me.
You're talking about Rumi. I think there's another very beautiful poem, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you have no idea how hard I've looked for a gift to bring you.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seemed right. Mm-hmm. What's the point of bringing gold to the gold mine or water to the ocean?
Mm-hmm.
Everything I came up with was like taking spices to the Orient.
Right.
It's no good giving my heart and my soul because you already have these.
Mm-hmm.
So I have brought you a mirror. Look at yourself and remember me.
Oh, wow. So amazing.
Right? So that idea of oneness. Mm. I mean, how beautifully it is encapsulated in that line. I knocked and I said, it is me. And he said, there's no place,
there's no place for you and I.
You and,
another small couplet that he says, By day I praised you and never knew it.
Mm-hmm.
By night, I stayed with you and never knew it. I always thought that I was me, but no, I was you and never knew it.
Beautiful. Amazing.
So, it's just the journey of going from...
And in this one statement here, Swami is so, very clearly he's laying out the whole thing. Swami says... this human experience, the
correct.
Human life that we're leading. Swami says there is matter, there is humanness, there is divinity.
Correct.
Right? Matter is selfishness.
Yes.
If you really look at it, this human body, physiologically, looking at it from the medical point of view, it is defined by selfishness.
Correct.
The body just doesn't, in fact, there was another program on, I think, Animal Planet or something I was seeing, where they do an experiment of to see, is there selflessness in any other creature?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is there any other creature which comes forward and gives up its self-interest to protect another?
Mm.
So there are so many symbiotic relationships between creatures and all that. But whenever they go deeper, they find that it is in some way built into the thinking of that animal. And it is for some self-benefit.
Right.
Right. And so they say that there is no idea of selflessness in any other creature other than human beings.
Mm.
And even in human beings, only if it is inculcated and if it is developed. Because the body is selfish.
Mm.
If left alone, the brain will only take care of this body. So Swami says matter is selfish. Human has kindness. So beautifully Swami put it. There's a little bit of you know, some kindness in humanness, but God has no selfishness.
Just total and love.
Elsewhere, Swami says, no, there is that selfishness is defined by that oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where selflessness is love, Swami says, no, in that there's a beautiful episode where Swami comes and asks Dr. Gokak, the first vice chancellor of our university, and a scholar, right? A Sahitya Academy winner, I think, if I'm not wrong, very, very great scholar, writer.
Yes.
So one day Swami walks up to him and Swami asks, "Hey Gokak, what is love?" And he says, "All my scholarship came down to null because I couldn't answer that question. What is love?" Swami's asking. And he said, I was blank, like a kindergarten child. I didn't know what to say. And Swami pats him and smiles and says, "Love is selflessness, self is lovelessness," and walks away.
Oh my God.
Right? So that love is defined by selflessness. There is no me and you, as you know, Rumi writes there. When there is no you and me, where what is that I can take from you and gather to myself? That selfishness becomes a very spontaneous expression. So Swami says, divinity is selflessness.
This reminds me of another beautiful incident which Kasturi uncle narrates in Loving God. He says, now they all were traveling from somewhere. I don't remember the exact details. So they were going in the car, and oftentimes Swami would narrate some beautiful stories and give them some points to ponder on, and he would make them sing, and Swami would also sing. So Kasturi uncle writes very beautifully. He says, you know, although I cannot bear to hear my own voice singing, but we always did it with the hope that Swami would also sing. So he won't excuse himself from the whole arrangement and agreement. So he would sing as well. So one of those days, there was a song session, and this was going on, and then Swami started talking about karma, bhakti, jnana and all that. And Swami defined bhakti. Then he said, Swami, love. Love is what is bhakti. Love for God is bhakti. So Swami was in fact asking, what is bhakti? And everybody was saying love for God. But what is that love? Then nobody could give a clear answer, and Swami said, removal of vibhakti is bhakti. And he said, what is vibhakti? Vibhakti is separation. The moment you remove separation, that is bhakti. So separation means there are two. The moment there is separation, there is an aspect of two. And the moment you remove the aspect of two, that is bhakti. So bhakti is unifying everything, unifying God and the entire creation, and living in that awareness that there is only one. And then somebody asked a question, Swami, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, what is bhakti? Think of me. Give up everything else. Don't think of anything else. Don't think of anybody else. Think only of me. Is it practical? Swami said, no, you have understood it wrongly. Krishna did not say, don't think of anybody else, any other thing or any other person. Krishna said, don't think that there is another. There is no other. What you have to think is that there is no other. That is what you are supposed to think. And not don't think that there is other and I should not think of other. That very subtle difference in the meaning which only Bhagwan can give. He said, that is what bhakti actually means.
Swami says that ananya chinta.
Right.
Swami says, there is no chinta of ananya.
Ananya.
There is nothing like the other.
Right.
Everything is the Lord. And then I think this portion, Swami ends it. Swami says that, you know, at the base, selfishness is essential for health and prosperity.
Right.
That's again the idea of medicine itself.
Mm-hmm.
The whole body is based on that idea that this brain protects this body. Right. That's how it works.
Right.
The concept of stress, how the brain works. Pain itself is a response of protecting the body. Right. And they say the reward system which is there in the brain. Everything is so that this body is served. So selfishness, Swami says, is the base. And it is required. Without health, what can be done?
Right.
So Swami is saying, I am not the body. Don't go and jump out of you know, the balcony. Something like that. That is not the idea. Without health, what can be done?
Correct.
Work for these must be done. Then help others. Then God
then
only.
Then God only.
In fact, the path is just laid out.
Laid out beautifully. There are a couple of things about this paragraph. I mean, you can talk hours and hours about this. But when Swami says, without health, what can be done? There is again this beautiful incident which Kasturi uncle writes. After the trip in Rishikesh, so when they go to that Purushottamananda's cave, and Swami has granted him the darshan of Jyotir Padmanabha Swami, and he is ecstatic and is so happy. And in fact, this is something which Raja Reddy Garu was sharing one of those days when I was just talking to him. He said, at that point in time, he was so happy. Purushottamananda was so happy, and Swami was so happy looking at his happiness. And Swami asked him, what do you want? And he said, I want to hear. He was a great lover of music. And he said, I want to hear these two particular songs of Tyagaraja Swami's compositions. And in that group whom Swami had taken, there was, I think, Ram or Lakshman or both of them. One, two of them were there. They were great Carnatic singers, Carnatic classical singers. And when he mentioned these two kritis, they had no clue about those two kritis. And the moment he mentioned, Swami started singing them. And as Swami sang, he was all the more blissful, and Swami was so happy singing and making him happy. And at that time, he said, he has sent you. And then Swami looked at Raja Reddy Garu and said, who has sent whom? He has only come. So he just looked and gave that mischievous smile and said, he has only come. But then, after that, something else Swami revealed, which I went through in Loving God, which is very beautiful. During the course of conversation, Swami was just inquiring, how are you, how is everything and all that. Suddenly, Swami made reference to an incident which happened several years before. And Swami Purushottamananda's disciples and he, all of them were completely, taken aback. Swami said, for many years, they would use stones to light the fire in the cave. As evening would approach, they would take two stones and strike the stones, like how it's done in the traditional way to light the fire for a yajnam. And sometimes the spark would not come, and they would go through a lot of struggle. And then it would start getting very cold, and sometimes their health would get affected because... So somehow they had this, ritual of getting the fire from the stones, and this was to go on, and so some of their health sometimes used to get affected. And one day when they were just, the spark was just not coming, they suddenly found a matchbox. And Swami said, who put that matchbox? I put that matchbox there. Swami just reminded them of that incident. So because he didn't want their health to get spoiled, he said, you need that fire, you need that heat to keep your health. So without health, you can't run. So God comes to protect the sages and to, you know, foster their sadhana. But at the same time, you have to maintain your health. You have to have good health. Only then you can do your sadhana. So Swami said, I put that matchbox there so that you get the warmth.
Right. And that's why Swami is clearly making it, you know, you think you're not the body, but that is not to demean or belittle the need of the body. There is a certain respect that has to be given. And then Swami says, then you help others. And then the whole idea is to dedicate everything to God. So that whole portion ends with Hislop asking, but Swami, even in that worldly work of necessary selfishness, where is I? Surely it is only God who is doing work.
Right.
Swami says, that is better. That is the best way. You are only an instrument for Swami, an instrument which Swami is using for His purpose. You, US chairman, speaking of Swami's teachings, and so on. Swami says constantly that nimitta bhavam, which Krishna speaks about in the Gita, thinking that you are only an instrument and the energy is flowing. And for many of us to immediately jump to the idea that I am God and I am Swami might be different.
Right.
In fact, that is why Krishna gives that whole technique. Think that you are an instrument of God, you're an agent of divine energy, agent of divine work, and then slowly you will identify yourself with the divinity itself. So I think we'll take a quick break here because the conversation also changes gear, so to say. The next set of conversations is between Hislop and another devotee, I think, in an interview. So dear listeners, don't go away. We'll take a quick break and we'll continue with the conversation here.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. So we are continuing the discussion of Dr. John Hislop with Swami. And before we go on to the next segment, this last statement which Swami made has so many things, as we mentioned, we can just go on and on discussing. I just would like to highlight a few points. The first line which Swami says, do not equate this body with human bodies. It is only the appearance of a form for the sake of the devotees. That itself is so powerful. And on one side, we see that here is a physical form. We see that this form is, always maintained clean and neat. If you were to look at the physical aspects of this form, like so perfect in cleanliness, every darshan that Swami came out, because he had to set an example of how to maintain your own body. So Swami would always be so perfect. The crease on the robe had to be perfectly aligned. It had to be straight. And nails, Swami's toe nails would always be neatly cut. And these are some things which he showed, how, although he is not limited by this body, how this body always set an example. But then there are times where he shows that he is not limited by this body. So both these things went hand in hand. In fact, most of the things that, again, the next statement that he says here is, it is for the sake of the devotees. Like everything that he did is for this, everything this body did is for the sake of the devotees. A very sweet incident which happened at one of those years in Kodaikanal, which I've heard, is every time Swami would come from darshan, from outside, he would first go into the washroom and then he would come out. And then he said, you boys are thinking that every time I come, I go to the washroom. No, I go only to wash my feet. Because when I'm walking outside and afterwards when I come inside, if you touch, I don't want any of that dust to come from my feet. So, I mean, the perfection where every small aspect of this, that form that he adorned, he took care of. Then at the same time, we'll look at Swami as a form. He was not affected by heat or cold. He was not affected to the body. Like we have heard so many stories where, you know, there would be temperature and then in an instant the fever has gone down. So he had perfect control over the body. In fact, another sweet incident which comes to mind is so Swami was standing on the veranda and somebody, one of the students got up and said, Swami, it seems you're going to Vrindavan tomorrow. And Swami said, no, I don't know my plan. You go to the ladies in the South Indian canteen, possibly they will know my plan. So then Swami made a very beautiful statement. Swami said, see, why should I go to Vrindavan? Then he said, Swami, it's summer. It's getting very hot here. Swami said, Nen ikkade putti ikkade perigano. I was born here and I grew up here. For me, there is no difference between heat and not heat and cold and heat and cold. I have no difference of these things. I go to Vrindavan so that the devotees are more comfortable. For this body, there is no difference between heat and cold. I go to Vrindavan so that the devotees find it more comfortable. They are, not put to too much heat or too much cold. They cannot bear it. For their sake, I go to Vrindavan.
No, I mean, the one thing that we've observed in Vrindavan can get really cold.
Right.
Being students in Vrindavan, especially if Swami chooses to come during the winter months. I still recall one of those years Swami was there in Vrindavan during December.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas was celebrated there.
Correct.
During the just before the inauguration of the Whitefield Hospital. It used to be so cold.
Mm.
Swami would come at 8 o'clock in the morning. Swami had postponed the time of darshan because it was getting too cold in the morning and devotees were coming and all of that. We could not sit on the floor. We all had to have our mats we used to sit on because it would be so cold, the
yes.
marble floor.
Mm.
There would be a carpet for Swami.
Mm.
First of all, Swami comes without wearing any extra clothing. Right?
Right.
We all would be having layers inside. Some of the boys would come wearing jackets to Mandir
right.
and all of that. The same thin robe.
That's it.
Not even the texture of the robe also doesn't change. Forget about layering up. the texture of the same robe that you were wearing, same dhoti, and there would be a carpet for him to walk, but Swami would never walk on that carpet.
Right.
Because walking on that carpet means Swami would be a little distant from devotees. You know, in the pretext of picking letters from devotees, Swami would invariably walk on that. And, you know, and there was no... you and I can put up with cold,
right,
but it would show on the face that you're trying to put up with, you know, brave
that. No discomfort
that. No discomfort in him at all. We've seen that that control over the body.
I mean, forget Vrindavan. Here again, in Loving God, Kasturi uncle recollects when they went to Kashmir.
Mm.
Okay, so he said after the Rishikesh trip, they went back to Delhi. And
okay,
suddenly there was this delightful thing where Swami agreed to take them to Kashmir for a week.
Mm-hmm.
So he said one of those days, Swami was going to take them to the snow line of the Himalayan ranges. So where they can start seeing the snow. And so Kasturi uncle was almost begging to be excused, because he said one blessed doctor came and saw that I had 104 temperature.
Mm.
So he was actually not well, and he was nearing his 60s at that time, I suppose.
Okay.
So he said, see, I'm advanced in age and I'm running temperature and all that. So he thought he could get excused from that. And Swami came and looked at him and Swami said, hey, Kasturi, why are you so late? Get into the car. And he says, with that one command of Swami, I left behind my fever. I threw it and rushed into the car. And then he describes in his beautiful style how it was so difficult for him to get onto that, pony that they had selected. It was called Black Beauty, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the pony or the horse on which Swami was sitting was called Raja.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so they were going in Gulmarg. They were going up and it was getting colder and cold. And Swami was looking at each one. And then he said, we were just so focused on Swami. But at the same time, our hands and legs were shivering. And once they reached the snow line, they got down and Swami was actually taking snow. And then he was like playing with them. He was throwing these snowballs on them and all of them. Then he said, all that was going on and we all were having a good time. Suddenly, I looked at Swami and realized that he's wearing that same thin robe. Nothing else. He's not worn any wool. He's not worn any sweater. He's not worn anything. So that same body, which it had that same, of course, at that time, silk robe. He said, Swami is wearing that silk robe. Nothing else. And he said, That is when I realized this is Lord Shiva himself playing in his own
backyard.
So that body which Swami adorned, on one level, yes, you can relate it to a physical form, but on another level, it's completely for the sake of the devotees. Whatever he did was for the sake of the devotees. In fact, another beautiful incident, the mysteries of this form, the mysteries of this form, he said, Kasturi uncle was also narrating that even if he unveiled a small portion of that mystery of this form, how many of us can actually take it? How many of us can actually withstand the power of who the avatar is? He narrates a beautiful incident. He says, in Chittur, many must be in mid-50s when Swami was going around many small towns, villages of India. He was just going around. He said, a small school in Chittur, he says, Kannan High School.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, Swami went there and Swami was actually giving a discourse on a football field. And obviously, because Swami is giving a talk and there were thousands of people gathered there. And he said, a very, very strange incident took place. Suddenly, some of the people, they could not withstand the vibrations and the power. And they could not understand this mysterious magnificence of Swami's presence and his discourse. And they started to swoon. They went into an ecstatic frenzy and they were like kind of swooning. And some of them had to be actually carried and put on, made to lie down on the side.
Mm-hmm.
About 13 or 14 of them. Like many of them had this kind of experience. And then Swami was giving his discourse. And then Swami smiled. And then, of course, Swami went and blessed them later. But he said that was one occasion. After that, it has never happened again.
Mm.
So he said, possibly Swami, unveil a little bit of the mystery of what this form actually is.
Mm.
and people could not take it. Like when you talk about Arjuna having to witness the Vishwarupa Darshan, that is because he was granted that vision. So this form which came down in the human, as a human being and lived amongst us, you cannot limit it to the limitation. So that's exactly what Swami is saying. Do not equate this body with human beings.
Right, and when Swami is saying that this whole body is taken for the benefit of mankind, again, many, many stories. One of the things, I think Professor Kasturi only has recorded it somewhere, mm-hmm. where Swami actually falls off the first floor of the mandir, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was the time when the mandir was being constructed, or one of the buildings in Prashant Nilayam, and Swami would every day visit. So the whole place was messy, right? The floors were half completed. There was sand and gravel all over the place. So Swami was standing and talking to the devotees there and giving instructions. Suddenly Swami blanked out.
Mm.
And he said, I'm coming, and ran out of the balcony.
Oh.
And there was no parapet wall. Right? Swami just ran out, I think first or second floor,
right.
and fell down. And Swami was unconscious. Swami had gone into a trance. So the devotees ran down, and luckily there was some sand down. And Swami had fallen in that sand. Swami did sustain some injuries, and I think he had some deep cuts and all that. And it took a few hours for Swami to come back from wherever he had been. And Swami came back, and then Swami said, no, some devotee was in trouble. I had to rush to save them. And then the devotees, they said, Swami, please take care. Don't do like this.
Mm.
They said, you know, just next to that sand where you fell, there was a heap of gravel. Had you fallen there, the injuries would have been fatal. And Swami said, what would have happened maximum?
Mm.
His body would have perished.
My God.
He said, that's all known. After all, this body was taken for that purpose only, to protect the devotees. So in the process of it goes, what is there? Swami very casually said. And you know, and the other occasion I remember was when Swami had taken over the mumps of a primary school child. I think when we were students, at least when I was a student. In
That was 2003, I think. Or
Right, 2003, I think. Guru Purnima time.
Yes.
Swami had taken over, the child was suffering, and Swami had called that child inside the interview room, and I think Warden Auntie or Muni Auntie had told Swami that Swami, this boy is suffering, he's not able to eat. And then Swami blessed him. Swami said, don't worry, you'll be fine. And the next day onwards, we could see that Swami had that swelling.
Mm.
And Swami was really struggling to speak. We were able to see that. That time, some of our seniors who had the opportunity to go to interview room quite often, they said, Swami, why are you doing like this? Swami should cure this. And that time, Swami had said the same thing. Swami said, but I can't do this. Body has been taken for you. If you want to take care of this body, it's up to you.
Mm.
I will not do anything to take care of this body. Right? So when Swami says that this body has been taken for the purpose of serving, and as you said, we've seen the other side of that, the divine nature of that body also.
Right. I mean, this mystery cannot be comprehended.
Right?
People who have actually physically lived with Swami and seen, in fact, Swami's Kasturi uncle says, why do I take you along with me to these trips?
Mm-hmm.
Swami is taken. So this entire belt of East Godavari, West Godavari, then, you know, Krishna, Guntur, Nellore, all those places Swami has been traveling. Swami told Kasturi uncle and other, why do I take you along? So he was wondering what it is. Swami said, I want you to witness how the Vedas are being fulfilled. The words in the Vedas are being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, what is the implication of the word Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha, Sahasraksha Sahasrapad. Swami said, this Purusha Suktam says, Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha. What does it mean? He says, when I go to a place and give a talk, you see thousands are gathered there. And all of them have that same focus on me. That is Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha. That is God's thousand faces. He says, the magnetism, the power of attraction is so much that for 1 hour, the devotees are actually looking at Swami. He's giving a discourse for 1 hour. But after that 1 hour, when he goes inside for a brief time and comes out on the balcony of the house, again everybody gathers. Because you're never tired of looking at this beautiful form. And that is the power of... And he says, that is Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. You see the power of this body in the thousand faces that you see. And so Swami was telling him that, you know, everything that I do is for the devotees. And many of you cannot understand why I do certain things, why I don't do certain things. So there are thousands of stories. One more of that on those lines is when Swami had gone to, I believe, Kakinada, mm-hmm. in the 50s. Swami had gone there and something very unusual happened. Mm. Like, we all know that just before Swami gives a discourse, Swami just looks at the devotees for a while. And then Swami starts his discourse. And Swami has, in the later years, said that I look at the devotees to see what kind of doubts they're having, mm-hmm. what kind of questions they're having. And based on that, I give my discourse so that it answers all their queries. So, but on this day in Kakinada, Professor Kasturi describes three streets. He says all the three streets were meeting in the center, and Swami's, the pandal was put up there. And so Swami is on the dais and he could see all the three streets, and thousands of people had gathered there. There was no big ground as such. So it was in the streets itself. So what happened was people were gathered on the road, people were gathered on housetops, on rooftops, on, you know, on branches of trees. And wherever there was place and wherever they could get a direct sight of Swami, people were gathered there to listen to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And so thousands of people had gathered in Kakinada. And so Swami got up, rose up to give his discourse. And Swami is not starting the discourse, but intently looking at everybody around. And initially, Professor Kasturi writes, I thought it is like regularly how Swami looks. But this was going on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami is not starting his discourse. Swami is looking at this side, on the left side road. He was intently looking for some time on this. Then he came on this side. He was looking at the houses. He was looking at the trees. He was looking at the people. He was smiling and then focusing himself. He said 5 to 6 minutes this was going on. What has happened? Why Swami is not giving his discourse?
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami started and gave his discourse. And the discourse was over. And of course, Swami sang bhajan. Everybody was ecstatic, happy. Then when Swami came back, Swami asked, do you know why I delayed the discourse?
Mm-hmm.
They were saying, Swami, we were wondering what happened, why Swami was taking so much time to start the discourse. Swami is saying, see, those rooftops are all old. Those branches of the trees are not so strong.
Mm.
I was infusing power into them so that people don't fall down. How unique it is. Swami is saying, see, I am looking at those trees. I am looking at those houses. I am infusing power, strength. So I have to give discourse to my devotees and they have to stay in that pose for nearly 1 hour.
Mm.
So in order to make sure that they don't fall down, I'm looking at them to infuse power in them. So it's like, he says, there is absolutely no selfishness. Everything is done for the sake of devotees. This is yet another of those beautiful.
I mean, many, many stories come to mind, and especially talking about the body. I think you were there when sir was sharing this, the episode shared by Dr. Alreja,
mm-hmm.
about his... Swami, he checking Swami's temperature.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You call that.
It's just how in one instant, it showed...
Right. One hand was showing a
correct.
Certain BP and the other hand was showing a different BP. And Swami, he looks at Swami and Swami asks him. And I think first he checks Swami's pulse and then he finds that the BP is very low and it is dipping.
Mm.
So Swami looks at him and says, Doctor, what is your diagnosis? Swami asks him. And he says, Swami, it's like you're having a heart attack.
Mm.
That's when the BP will fall like this.
Mm.
Swami says, oh, is that so? And Swami said, anything else you want to check?
Mm.
And Dr. Alreja was not a stranger to Swami's ways. He said, Swami, can I check the other hand?
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, oh, okay, check.
Mm.
Perfect BP.
Mm.
And he said, Swami, your BP is perfect in this hand.
Mm.
Swami said, okay, doctor, what is your diagnosis now? He says.
Mm.
He said, Swami, what diagnosis I can do? This does not happen in a human body. And Swami very casually said, ee roju shivuduku konjam bagaledu.
One half of the body.
One half of the body. And Swami said, And, you know, I mean, there is nothing.
So mysterious.
There's absolutely mysterious. In fact, another story that I recall again, mm-hmm. I don't think it's there in any book. It was shared by a old devotee in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they were sitting in darshan one day. And there was this very elderly man who was sitting, looking, like somebody who's a yogi or, a renunciant. So he was sitting right in the front line and, like everybody else, very eager for Swami to come out for darshan. Swami comes, Swami stands in front of him, Swami doesn't speak anything to him. Swami collects letters from people around and Swami goes away. As soon as Swami goes, they find that this man breaks down and starts sobbing, crying like anybody else. And they come and ask him, "What happened, sir? Is there anything wrong?" And then he narrates his story.
Right.
He says, I come from somewhere in Rishikesh Himalayas. There is a specific siddhi if you acquire. Whoever you touch, you can absorb all their energy.
Right.
And
right.
all their powers you can absorb.
Mm.
So he said, "I've been practicing this for so many years." And then after that, after I acquired that siddhi, I decided that among all the people, the Sai Baba seems to be doing a lot of miracles. I will come and touch his feet. And I could, not necessarily feet. You just have to touch that person and through that touch, you transfer all his powers to yourself. So he said, "I came. And I found that he allows everybody to touch his feet. So I thought I will touch his feet and I will draw all his energy."
Right.
And he said, "I was waiting for this opportunity. Swami came. He stood in front of me. I stretched out to touch his feet. As much as I could search, I could not touch his feet."
Mm.
He says, "I put my hand under his robe and there was no feet. There was no feet to touch." He said, "What a mistake I have done to think like this." And to think that that feat was so accessible to us, right? When you say that, when Swami says, "I'm here for a devotee," you come with love, you come with devotion. You know, we as students, he allowed us to grab him literally.
Literally.
He allowed himself to be taken in that sense.
See, this form that Swami has donned, like when he says it's only for the sake of devotees, on one side, this form is so beautiful, it's so unique. His voice is so unique. His smile is so unique. It's divine. They can't say it's unique. It's divine. In fact, Kasturi uncle says the first time he got an opportunity to do anoint Swami, as he was getting up, one of his neighbors said, "This is your chance to check whether the hair is real or not." Swami's hair, whether it is a wig or it is real hair. So he said, "Okay, let me go." And he said, "My wife came, she was full of devotion and all. But he actually caught one hair, a tuft of hair and then he was pulling it to the left. And Swami was bending down and he just heard Swami's voice, "Pull it to the right also and see." then he broke down and he said, "What am I doing?" I mean, this beautiful form that Swami has actually taken is for his devotees, is for, giving us that joy and that experience of bliss. As we have mentioned in many of the talks, Swami said, when you actually meditate on the form, he said, "I have taken this form only because it is very beautiful and it is very easy for you to contemplate on it." So he says, "This hair, this face, this eyes, this smile. And then after my face, come directly to my feet." So he says, see, Swami has worn this robe so that it's easy for you to contemplate. So everything that he does is for us. And I think this form that he has taken and the way Swami has actually put it together in these few sentences, "Do not equate this body with human bodies. It is only the appearance of a form for the sake of the devotees. There is nothing of Swami except for his devotees. There are no desires. This body is just an appearance of form."
Beautiful. I think that we'll have to wind up. We're running out of time. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. As you can see, even every statement of Swami is so deep. And definitely, hopefully, Swami will give us the opportunity to go back. If not in the form of this program, at least individually, we should keep going back to these statements that Swami has made. And I'm sure as we progress on the spiritual path, these will make new sense to us, will give us new insights. And with that prayer, dear listeners, we'll end with this song. On the other side of it, you will be joined by Brother Ganesh and Brother Bhargav for the next program. We'll join you again next week for the afternoon satsang. Enjoy the song, a beautiful Telugu song. On the other side of it, the rest of the programs will continue.
Hallelujah.